Ladies and gentlemen, if any bulletins on the European situation are received, they will be presented during the course of the Good News program. Now, Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of fine entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studios in Hollywood. With our regular cast of favorites, plus Francis Wallace, nationally known football authority, and the guest star you're all waiting to hear, Spencer Tracy. And your host for the evening, America's foremost master of ceremonies, George Jessel.
Thank you, Ted Pearson, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I feel very honored this evening that I've been called upon to appear as your surprise master of ceremonies. Surprise. I've been standing by since June. But anyway, I love pinch-hitting for my pals Robert Young and Robert Taylor. They're both very busy fellows at this time. Bob Taylor with a new picture in which he stars with Wallace Beery called Stand Up and Fight, and Bob Young doing some final scenes in Joan Crawford's new picture, The Shining Hour. They've asked me to substitute for them, so here I am. And why not? I've been on the screen. What have they got that makes me photograph like a moose, huh? But anyway, photography is an interesting thing. With the different physical methods that they have of photographing you, I think it's always best.
Hey, all right, fellas. Just a...
Rah, 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 rah. Morgan for Senator.
Say, what's going on here?
He's a man for me and you.
What is this?
Rah, 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 rah.
Now, wait a minute, Frank, wait a minute.
Rula, make a rula, keep a cooler, vote for me.
That's a very nice entrance, Mr. Morgan. Remind me to give you a wrong cue later in the show, see?
Why, Georgie, my old friend Jester, how are you?
Fine, Senator, and how's Madam Senator, huh?
Well, I wouldn't know, Georgie. I haven't been home for days, they tell me. I've been busy doing a little political taxidermy.
Political taxidermy? What's that?
Stuffing ballot boxes.
Oh, that's what I like about you, Frank. You're a thief after my own heart.
Well, what's the difference? A few votes, more or less. I'm bound to be elected by a huge majority anyhow on account of my record.
Your record? You mean you've burned it?
Yes. What? Oh, no, I'm speaking of my public record, Georgie. I'm talking about my private life. The voters want a man they can trust, and I'm known all over the country as a model citizen, a man of regular habits.
Oh, now, Frank, don't make those fantastic claims.
What?
Your regular habits.
Yes.
It's only three nights ago you were arrested for whistling at a strange woman on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my regular habits.
Oh, well, look. You know, Frank, you ought to let me manage your campaign. I'd keep you out of trouble. I handled a campaign for a man back east, and in 2 days I got him 40,000 votes.
Honestly?
What's the difference? I got him, didn't I? And all it's fair in love and politics. The main thing is to know where to find the votes.
Oh, don't worry about me finding the votes. I spent the whole day today canvassing the colleges.
Mm.
This afternoon I went to a football game and got 15,000 votes right there.
Did you go after the co-eds?
Did I? Well, till that stadium policeman saw me, I was up with...
Oh, you mean their votes?
Yes, of course I do. Oh, well, I appeal to all the voters regardless of sex or political affiliation. There was only one unfortunate incident in the whole afternoon.
What was that, Senator?
Well, the halfback on the visiting team was getting a bit, he was getting off a big punt and he kicked me.
That's terrible. Where did he kick you?
Right on the 50-yard line.
Oh.
Well, I could barely limp over to the bandstand.
Bandstand? What were you doing at the bandstand?
Oh, didn't you ever hear of my career in college?
Well, tell me, I'm a college man. I'm an old Kappa Beta Phi Schlepper man. Well, of course, tell me, Frank.
Oh, for heaven. Well, hit it, fellas.
At every football game, I don't know who's to blame, but no one talks about the college band. Where I come from, I swear, it's a different story there. The folks have got a college band, what am?
Oh, man, what more they've got a nifty leader man. What more, he's just the best that's in the land.
I'm so high-stepping, I'm full of peppin'. They call me Fran, the college leader man.
His alma mater, to think he's hotter than any other leader of a band.
I saw the swinging. I saw the trucking, parading by the people in the stands.
And folks who come down, don't yell for touchdown. They yell for Fran, the college leader man.
Believe me, watch a tempo I can hit. Makes you want to sway.
Now his tempo will change the tip. There he goes again, the other way.
You take the fullback, you take the halfback, and every football hero in the land.
But you've got music,
yeah,
and you've got heaven,
yeah,
and you've got Fran, the college leader man. Oh, what a man! What a man is Fran, the leader of the band.
A lot of votes, Senator. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here comes Fanny Bryce as that nerve-tearing rascal, Baby Snook. Tonight, Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is happily engaged in his private little hobby painting. We find him laboring in the cellar on his great masterpiece, hoping he will not be disturbed. But fate is indeed unkind. Listen.
Who is it? No, it's you.
Why are you wearing Mommy's dress?
It's not Mommy's dress. It's a smock.
It looks like Mommy's dress.
Well, it's not. All artists wear these. Now, leave me alone.
Why are you painting in the cellar?
Because I like to paint down here. And please don't bother me with questions.
Last night you were painting in the kitchen.
I know, but I like to paint the cellar better.
Why?
Because the light is better. Besides, it gives me more the feeling of the true artist. Cramped quarters, dreary looking. Yes, it inspires me. Now do you understand why I like to paint in the cellar?
Yes, Daddy. Mama kicked you out of the kitchen.
You mind your own business. Why, all great artists painted under difficulties. Why, even Rembrandt's greatest masterpiece was painted on an empty stomach.
Whose stomach, Daddy?
Rembrandt.
Didn't it come off when he took the bath?
Oh, what's the use? Now keep quiet.
Daddy.
What?
Mm-hmm. You got some paint on Mommy's dress.
I told you it's not Mommy's dress. Go on upstairs.
I don't want
it. Snooks, don't you touch my canvas.
What is it, Daddy?
It's a sea picture. And it's great, too, no matter what anybody says. How do you like it, Snooks?
Oh. I like it.
There you are. A child judges art instinctively. Of course she likes it. I'm going to call this picture Fate.
Why?
Well, you see that little boat being tossed about by those high waves?
Mm-hmm.
And you notice that sailor on board with his hands raised to heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has faith that he'll be rescued.
What's faith, Daddy?
Well, you can see the boat, and you can see the sailor.
Mm-hmm.
But if I told you there was a Frankfurter on that boat, and you believed me, that would be faith. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
All right, what is faith?
A Frankfurt on a boat.
Oh, go away. Let me finish this painting.
I want to stay here, Daddy.
Then sit in the corner and play.
What shall I do, Daddy?
Do nothing.
Well, how will I know when I'm finished?
Oh, for heaven's sake. Here, take this crayon and draw on a piece of paper.
What shall I draw, Daddy?
Anything. Guess I'll have to highlight the side of this boat a little. But be very steady and careful. Just a touch.
Mommy!
Oh, Snooks! Don't yell like that.
Why?
You made me smudge my painting. What do you want?
How many kinds of milk is there?
Oh, I don't know. 5 or 6, I guess. There's buttermilk and whole milk, skim milk.
A milk of magnesia?
No. Why do you want to know how many kinds of milk there are?
I'm drawing a picture of a cow.
Well?
I want to know how many faucets to put on it.
Stop that nonsense. Now draw something else.
All right.
Don't sing. Just draw.
Why?
Because you make me nervous. My hand shakes. Now keep quiet while I darken this wave. Easy now.
Daddy!
Oh, you made me spoil it again. What is it?
I brought a picture.
Picture? What, that horrible mess? What is it supposed to be?
Uncle Louie.
Snooks, you know as well as I do, that doesn't look very much like Uncle Louie.
Don't it?
No.
Well, I'll put a tail on it and make it a monkey.
Snooks, you go upstairs and let me work. And stop fooling with those paints. Snooks, put down that brush.
I want to paint with it, Dad.
No, you can't. It's very expensive. That's a camel's hairbrush.
Huh?
It's a camel's hairbrush.
How did he do it?
How does who do what?
How did the camel brush his hair with it?
The camel doesn't brush his hair. The hair in this brush is supposed to come from a camel, but it's really made out of hog bristles, which don't come from a pig, but are taken from a beaver, and that's why they call it camel's hair.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. I'll go away and let me enjoy myself. Please.
Are you having fun, Daddy?
Yes, it's the only pleasure I get in this house. Now leave me alone. I'm very happy down here.
I'll be good if you show me some more pictures.
Well, would you really like to see them?
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm going to show you one that I've never shown anybody. If you like it, Snooks, it'll make me very happy. Here. This is my masterpiece.
I like it.
You do? Does it look real?
Uh-huh. It's so real, it makes me hungry.
Hungry?
Uh-huh.
Well, why should this painting make you hungry? It's supposed to be a beautiful sunset.
Oh. I thought it was a Friday.
Art? Oh, what do you know about art? Now go on upstairs, quick, before I get mad.
I know what.
Get out of here.
If you don't let me stay, I'll eat the paint.
Oh, don't. That's poison. Snooks, come here.
I won't.
Look out for that easel. Snooks. Oh, my beautiful painting ruined. Smeared all over with paint, and the canvas is torn. Oh.
I think I'll go upstairs now.
Oh, wait a minute. I want to give you something.
What?
This.
And now here's the young Irish lad whose singing always gives me a thrill. Believe me, 'tis a pleasure to introduce me old friend Phil Reagan singing With You on Me Mind. Go ahead, me boy, go ahead.
It's such a lovely party, everyone is gay. I should take a part in it, but I can't put my heart in it. With you on my mind, with you still in my heart, how can I start a new romance? A new romance would never stand a chance. With you in my dreams, with you haunting me still, how can I thrill to someone else's charm? How can I long for someone else's arms? Love's all embers glow, keeping the yearning, nor the fire's low, still it keeps burning. With you on my mind, with me telling of you, somebody new would just be bored with me, and I'd be bored as I could be with other company. With you on my mind, love's all glow, keeping me yearning, nor the fire's low, still it keeps burning. With you on my mind, with me telling of you, somebody new just be bored with me. And I'd be bored as I could be with other company. With you on my mind. With you on my mind.
Ladies and gentlemen, last night I had the pleasure of seeing the new Clark Gable Myrna-Loy picture, Too Hot to Handle, which the critics predict will one of the biggest hits of the movie season. It's a picture full of thrills and some of the most sensational photography of a primitive country that I've ever seen. The shots were made in Netherlands, Guiana, about 174 miles from the famous French penal colony at Devil's Island. The men responsible for this part of the picture are with us tonight, Clyde Devine, cameraman, and Dick Russin, director. Clyde, I understand that you were down in Netherlands, Guiana, for about 6 weeks.
That's right, George.
Clyde, I've always had an ambition to appear in a theater down there. I can just close my eyes and see my names in lights. George Jessel at Lowe's Netherlands, Guiana. Ah.
I wish you'd been there last summer, although we didn't have much time to go to shows.
You were on a rush assignment, weren't you, Clyde?
Well, just to give you an idea, when we were starting down there, we saw posters of Too Hot to Handle in Miami, Florida. We really hustled, George. We air-mailed all our film as soon as it was shot.
Of course. Plus, you had a script with you, I suppose. Is that right, Dick?
Yes. The script called for certain things that run exactly a cinch to do. Tell George about our long shot of the native village, Clyde.
Well, we were taking shots of a little native village right in the middle of the thickest jungle I ever saw.
Yeah, just let me interrupt a second, Clyde. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Deviner is one cameraman that's a connoisseur of jungles. He spent 2 years in Africa filming Crater Horn. Never got lost in a jungle, but it took him 2 hours to find an exit from the Coliseum last Saturday at the football game. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, anyway, George, we were photographing this native village, and we received an order from Hollywood for a long shot of it.
So?
Well, you know that all you do in a long shot is to get a long ways from your subject, aim the camera at it, and crank it. But the trouble with this long shot was that the jungle was tight around the village, and you couldn't haul your camera back into the woods and shoot because the jungle was so thick.
Couldn't you get up on a hill and shoot down?
Could have, except for one thing.
What was that?
No hill.
Oh.
Whole country was as flat as a pool table, George.
Like my singing. I understand, of course.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was a physical impossibility to get a long shot of the village.
I see. Well, what did you do, boys?
We found a tree about 125 feet high. Spent 2 days cutting away branches that shut off the view, and rigged up a block and tackle and hoisted the 300-pound camera 100 feet up the tree. Then I climbed up and cranked out a long shot.
And I remember that shot in the picture. Now tell me, Dick Russin, did you have any other tough assignments?
Why, yes. We were supposed to photograph an actor carrying another fellow in his arms and wading into the river till he reached an airplane, then putting him aboard. We lined up the shot down by the bank of the river with a lot of natives standing around watching. And our man was just about to step into the river when one of the chiefs rushed into the scene and commanded us to stop.
And me, a native chief, gives orders to a director? Why, they can't do that.
In Netherland, Guiana, they can't.
I see.
Well, George, the chief sent up to the village and had somebody bring down a lot of fresh-killed beef and just dipped it into the stream. When he took it out, there was no more meat on it, stripped clean as a whistle.
Sharks?
No. No, they were piranhas, a little cannibal fish. Their teeth are so sharp that... well, they can take a bite out of your leg without you even feeling it.
Yeah, like Eddie Cantor. I know. Now, I remember that shot in the picture, too, and I think you wound up taking the chap in the plane in a canoe. Is that right?
That's right. The fish don't eat canoes.
If they did, that really would be news. Well, boys, it's a great picture, and no wonder. When you have a fine producer like Larry Weingarten, you're bound to get great entertainment. With a director like Jack Conway and stars like Clark Gable and Myrna Loy, with Walter Connolly, Walter Pigeon, and Leo Carrillo, the picture is a thriller minute all the way. And the contribution that you fellas made will never be forgotten. Thank you, Dick Russin and Clyde Devine. Now, Ted Pearson.
Thank you, George. Friends, let me ask you, how long has it been since you've sat back in your chair after breakfast or after dinner and exclaimed,
"Say, that was one grand cup of coffee."
Well, my guess is that because thousands more are drinking Maxwell House these days, why, naturally, more people are saying just that about their cup of coffee. Here's the reason. Everybody who's drinking Maxwell House today is enjoying coffee that's even richer and more delicious than ever before. So let me ask you, have you tried Maxwell House lately? If you haven't, then we believe you're missing the greatest coffee pleasure in your life. You see, Maxwell House coffee has actually been improved in two important ways. First,
this already superb blend of the world's choice coffees has been still further enriched. You'll taste this extra richness with your very first cup. You'll notice a new smoothness and mellowness that'll satisfy you, we believe, beyond any coffee you've ever known.
Second,
this wonderfully enriched Maxwell House blend is now roasted by a new process called Radiant Roast. Now, radiant heat penetrates each coffee bean, gives it not just a surface roasting, but roasts it evenly through and through. Naturally, this means still more full flavor in your cup of coffee.
And that extra flavor, friends, is what you're missing if you haven't tried Maxwell House coffee lately. Discover this better coffee. It's at your grocer's now in the same familiar blue super vacuum can you've always known. Tomorrow, enjoy this coffee that now more than ever is good to the last drop.
Here's Meredith Wilson and his orchestra giving you their interpretation of the newest dance craze created by Irving Berlin for the Astaire Rogers musical, Carefree, The Yam. All right, Meredith, yum, yum. Let's make a yam section.
Mr. Jessel.
Yes, Meredith, what is it?
Clyde DeVinna wants you to introduce him to Frank Morgan.
On the level, Clyde, do you mean that?
Yes, I've been wanting to meet him the worst way.
Well, any way you meet Morgan, that's the worst way, I'll tell you. Whatever you want, all right, say, Frank, Frank.
Well, that's the last time I play cards with those musicians. Those fellas cheat.
Now, wait a minute, Frank. Don't what? You accuse my men of sharp practice.
No, Wilson's men don't practice at all. There.
Well, all I know is I sat there with three aces full, and that thieving piccolo player comes up with a straight flush, ace high.
So the guy had a straight flush. What makes you think he's cheating?
Well, I know what I dealt him.
Frank, take those kings out of your sleeve and shake hands with Clyde DeVinna.
Oh, yes. I know your brother, Andy DeVinna.
Divine.
I think it's Ducky, too. He's a nice kid.
No relation, Mr. Morgan.
No, Frank, this man is Clyde DeVinna. He fools with cameras. He is also a registered voter.
Oh, cameras, huh?
Yes, Frank. That should lead you into 4 minutes of fast life.
Mr. DeVinna, I am profoundly interested in anybody that loves photography, especially the vast army of fellows like yourself, the Dubs.
Dubs? You're an expert cameraman, huh, Morgan?
Am I? Who do you think invented the slow motion?
Two Scotchmen reaching for a dinner check.
A cheap quip worthy of the variety stages.
I wish I could get on one, too. What do you think of that?
Don't try to change the subject. I could talk for hours of my stage career. I'm talking to Mr. DeVinna now about photography. Tell me, sir, do you get your snaps developed at the drugstore?
Well, I...
Don't apologize. My friend is as good a place as any.
Frank, Mr. DeVinna has done quite a bit of work with the camera. His last assignment was too hot to handle.
It was. They should have sent for me. Well, nothing's too hot for Morgan to handle. Why, when I was a newsreel cameraman, I spent four successive years covering the beauty contest in Atlantic City. I didn't get any pictures, but I did plenty of work in the darkroom. It's surprising what you can develop there.
Mr. Morgan, I used to be a newsreel cameraman myself.
You were? Then you must remember me. I made my reputation in 1924, covering the coronation speech of the King of Baronia and the eruption of Mount Vesuvius.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Mr. Morgan. Both those things happened on the same day, 3,000 miles apart.
Oh, they did?
Yes. How could you be in both places at the same time?
How could I be in both places? Yes, well, that year I was leading a double life.
I still don't understand it, Mr. Morgan.
Skepticism is every man's privilege. Nevertheless, I got both pictures.
Well, all I can say is that a shot of the Vesuvius eruption and the king's coronation address should be pretty valuable.
Well, they've been worth a fortune, my friend, had I not made a careless oversight which resulted in a double exposure.
Really? What happened?
Well, we ran the film in the projection room, and as soon as the king began to speak, molten lava ran out of his mouth, smoke poured out of his ears, and believe it or not, his coattails were on fire.
Oh,
now, this is going too far, fellas. I don't believe it myself.
Well, Mr. Morgan, I covered the first transatlantic flight in 1923.
Is that so?
Excuse me, gentlemen. Did you know that the average annual rainfall in New Jersey is 13 and a half inches?
What's that got to do with photography?
Nothing, but I haven't said anything since page two. All right, go ahead with your camera work.
Jessel, for a man who knows but nothing about photography, you're being very negative. Oh, I didn't do that either. What were you saying, DeVinna?
I meant to ask you, Mr. Morgan, have you had any experience with three-dimensional photography?
Son, I solved all the problems of three-dimensional photography and three-dimensional projection in the year 1922. When I had it perfected, I took a picture of a locomotive speeding along at 60 miles an hour and projected it before an audience at the Pismo Avenue Theater in Long Beach, California.
Well, what happened?
Well, it was so real, the locomotive ran right off the screen and killed 50 people. It'll never be popular.
What was your first experience as a cameraman, Mr. Morgan?
My first experience, Clyde, oh, gracious, I'll never forget it. I was a cub on the old New York Sphere at the time, and the city editor sent me down to get pictures of the arrival of Fulton's new invention, the steamboat, when it arrived in New York Harbor.
But, Mr. Morgan, the steamboat was invented in 1845.
That's right, but there were no cameras in those days. I went down to the harbor, a raw country boy, apples in my cheeks, stars in my eyes, and a pawn ticket in my pocket.
A pawn ticket?
Yes, I'd had to pawn an heirloom, my grandfather's fine old watch, to get money for my camera.
You must have got a pretty good camera with all that money.
Well, no. Even in those days, you couldn't get much of a camera for 28 cents. What did my grandfather care about the time?
28 cents.
Well, a small sum, no doubt, but my ingenuity was equal to the challenge. I found an old Maxwell House coffee can, bored a hole in the end of it, bought a percolator top in the dime store for a lens, and constructed an ingenious shutter with a pair of old sugar tongs. I rushed to the pier and stood with the other photographers waiting for the historic event.
I suppose the other boys had pretty classy equipment, didn't they?
Did they? $8 million worth of cameras were on the pier that day. Graflex, Reflex, Duplex, Triplex, and Kleenex. I'll never forget how they simpered at me when I arrived with my homemade coffee can camera.
Did you really hope to get a picture?
My confidence never flagged, but just as the pretty craft slid primly into our slip, a cowardly representative of the Daily Bugle gave me a push from the rear. I can feel it to this day, and dumped me into the churning waters of the North River.
Oh, what a terrible break.
Never fear, a Morgan turns misfortune into opportunity. There I was, 6 feet underwater as the Claremont passed above me. And what did I do? I focused carefully and made a daring underwater shot, the first angle shot in history. Having snapped the shutter, I rose to the surface, swam ashore with the camera between my teeth, and rushed home, still dripping, to develop my precious film. To save time, I poured the solution right into the camera. Let it stand for 3 minutes over an infrared heating lamp,
took off the lid of the coffee can, and what do you think?
You had the greatest picture of them all.
No, but I had a darn fine cup of coffee. Don't forget to vote for me, DeVille. So long.
Well, folks, I imagine you won't need more than one guest to tell what comes next in the order of the evening. That's right. That cheery custom of ours, a moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee. But first, a special announcement. General Foods Corporation invites you to hear the new Joe Penner Show, presented by Huskies, the tempting new whole wheat cereal. It starts next week. Consult your local newspaper for time and station. Yes, sir, Joe Penner will be back next Thursday night. And now, Meredith, you pour out some music. We'll pour the Maxwell House coffee that goes with it. We now pause briefly for station identification.
Maxwell House takes pleasure in presenting one of MGM's newest discoveries, Miss Katrina Wells, Christina Wells, presenting a special arrangement of melodies from Rudolf Grimmel's famous operetta, Rose Marie. Present the second in our fall series in the MGM Theater of the Air, Spencer Tracy and Rita Johnson, in scenes adapted from the Andreev's play.
Hi, Spencer.
He Who Gets Slapped.
It is a story that is always old and always new. The story of a clown who laughs to hide his tears. The clown in our radio adaptation will be played by Spencer Tracy. When the story begins, he's not a clown. Until recently, he was a distinguished scientist. But fate has slapped him in the face. And so he decided to follow a new profession. As our scene opens, we find him a gentleman in immaculate evening clothes, sitting in a box at the circus long after the performance is over. The attendants are beginning to clean up the arena. One of them speaks to the magnificently dressed gentleman.
Staying all night, sir?
Oh, no. No, of course not.
Yeah, I have to go out through the back. Front of the house will be locked up.
Thank you. Where will I find the manager's office?
Through the door over there, on your right.
Over there?
Yes, sir. There, where those two clowns are just coming out.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Excuse me.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I see that you two gentlemen are clowns.
Yes, sir.
A noble and enviable profession. May I shake hands with you?
You may, sir.
I am honored. And now, could you gentlemen show me the manager's office?
That door right there.
Thank you.
Come in.
Pardon me. Would this be the manager's office?
Yes, sir. I am the proprietor. What can I do for you?
Give me a chance to do something for you.
Oh, you want a job, huh? Well, you don't look like it. Well, my friend, I can't afford extra talent.
Oh, but I don't expect to be paid anything to be a clown.
A clown? You? Well, what do you think of that, Jackson? Come here.
Yes, monsieur?
This is the head clown of our circus, the famous Jim Jackson.
Oh, yes, I recognized him instantly, even without his makeup. Mr. Jackson, you're a genius. You have given me such pleasure. Allow me to shake your hand.
How are you?
Jackson, this gentleman wants to be a clown. He says he'll work for nothing.
No pay? Oh, that won't do. We have our union. Let's see a grin. Like this.
How's that?
Wider, broader. That's better. What else can you do?
I can be slapped.
That's no good. You see, my friend, clowns have to make the audience laugh.
They'll laugh when I'm slapped. They laughed when it happened before.
Oh, you clowned before then?
Not professionally.
But my friend, all clowns get slapped.
Yes, yes, but they don't make speeches first.
Speeches?
Yes, yes, about science. I know all about science or art or philosophy, whatever you like.
I'm beginning to see his idea. Yeah, there's something about him like a scientist, a man of importance. Tell me, monsieur, you impress them first by what you say. Is that right?
Yes. But can I say anything I please? Wise, important things?
Sure, but we won't let you finish. One of the clowns will slap you down.
Just what happens in the world outside. And people will call me he who gets slapped.
He who gets slapped? Not bad.
And so I have found a name for myself, my friends. Call me he.
All right, he. Try this.
Oh, wait a minute.
He who gets slapped.
Why, yes, of course. That's just the way it was.
The way it was?
Yes. It was funny, wasn't it?
And so this mysterious gentleman, he who gets slapped, becomes a clown. In the beginning, he is successful. He insults his audience, and when he is slapped, the people scream with laughter. But now that no one knows it, he has fallen in love. A beautiful young girl, the daughter of a penniless Italian count, has joined the troupe as a bareback rider. From the first day, he has paid her delicate, scarcely noticeable attentions. But the beautiful Consuelo would be the last to guess that he is in love with her. Her heart belongs to Bazzano, the handsome young bareback rider who works with her in the ring. But she likes the clown, and one evening while the show is on, he has just finished his act.
Congratulations, he. You were wonderful tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, but your costume, you poor dear, it's torn to pieces.
It always is when I come off.
Well, you're forever doing nice things for me, so now I can do something for you. Look, that beautiful red heart on your chest is about to fall off. Let me sew it on for you.
If it wouldn't be too much trouble.
No, no, sit down there. It won't take a second. There. I saw you and Papa Bouquet watching our act from the tunnel. You stand in the same place every night.
Beauty of form, beauty of line, beauty of rhythm.
Oh, where do you learn such fancy speeches? He, your mouth is so funny. Did you paint that laugh on yourself?
Yes, Consuelo.
I'd like to be a clown. Why are there no women clowns?
I really don't know.
Well, anyway, your heart won't come off again when I've finished. But you must pay me for my work.
With what? With my heart, take it. It's yours.
Oh, how can I take it when I'm sewing it on? No. Tell me my fortune. You said you would sometime.
All right. Let me have your hand.
The last time a horrid old gypsy woman told it. She said love would only come to me through death. Now, that makes no sense, does it?
Perhaps. But look there. See?
What?
The letter H.
Yes, a sort of an H.
H is for he.
Some he always comes along, I suppose. But look again. See if you can't see a B.
Or Bizzano?
Oh, no. No, nonsense. He?
No, no. No, there's no B. If there were, it would mean beware of bareback riders. No. No, the H is all I see.
Hey, you haven't told me anything at all.
I've told you, but you didn't understand.
Well, you'll have to be more plain. I'm not clever, you know. Oh, don't jump like that. I might stick you.
Consuelo, you're so beautiful. The light shines through you. You must never know what it is to be false, to live a lie, to use your beauty to hurt, to do evil.
I still don't understand.
Youth turns to youth. Or youth stifles its urge to mate with beauty and turns to, well, pearls, for instance, Consuelo.
I should like to have some pearls.
Listen to me. There are deeper, more lovely things in life that come only when we've lived long and suffered. Pearls of the spirit. I have chests of jewels, Consuelo, to be poured out to enrich the woman I love.
Why, that's like something in a novel. And it's funny coming from your face.
I shall teach you to look behind that face.
H for he. What did you mean?
There is only one he. A very old god who has come down to earth only to love you, a goddess.
Oh, what are you talking about, he? Sometimes I think you're very wise and what you say way over my head, and sometimes I think you're just a
fool. Consuelo, do you know that even gods can go crazy?
Gods go crazy? What are you talking about, he? Oh, listen. Don't you know that music? Bassano solo ride. You never watch that, but I always...
Consuelo, don't go. Don't go. He's not for you.
Why, he? What's the matter?
Consuelo, you're mine. You must be mine. The gods have said it. My soul sings your name, Consuelo. My love, my goddess, my queen.
Why, you? You make me feel sick all over. You forget who you are. What a god. Did the other god slap you so hard that you fell out of heaven, god?
Wait. Please sit down. I didn't finish the game.
Oh. Was it a game? Well, why did you make me think you meant it then?
Slap me again.
I'm sorry I slapped you. Now you're funny.
Please strike me again.
I won't ever do that, he.
I want you to. It's part of the game.
There, dear.
I am the court fool who loves his queen. Didn't they teach you that every queen has a fool? He who gets slapped if he presumes.
But I'm not a queen, foolish he.
The queen of beauty. And beauty must have her fool. Her court is crowded with fools all in love with her. And the sound of slaps never stops.
Who is it?
The gunner will be on in a moment. You wanted me to tell you.
I know. I was just coming, Monsieur Briquet. How do I look, he?
You were never more beautiful.
Oh, goodbye, he.
Wait, Consuelo.
Yes?
Please slap me once more. One more slap.
But why, he?
I want to feel your hand against my cheek.
Magnificent. Another great performance added to the many. And to you, Miss Johnson, oh, if I were younger and unattached. But be still, my tired soul. Play, Meredith, play. Thank you.
So many people have requested them, so here's another of those good news satires. This one's titled, If Men Attended Fashion Shows as Women Do. Frank Morgan and Spencer Tracy are just entering Meredith Law Wilson's exclusive tailor salon to see the annual fall fashion review. They're met at the door by the famous fashion designer, Law Wilson himself.
Hello there, Morgan and Tracy. My, it was certainly darling of you two to come.
Well, I'm simply dying to see your new styles for fall. I'll bet they're scrumptious.
Yes, and I just need oodles of things, too, Wilson. I really haven't a stitch to my back.
Are you going to show anything new in undies?
Undies? Well, just you wait till you feast your eyes on some of our new imported shorts and red flannel longies. They're positively stunning.
Mm-hmm. How about pajamas? Do you think you might have anything with hiking boots and socks to match? I walk in my sleep. Maybe some little thing in a beige scarlet.
Well, I'll see. But you remind me later, Tracy. I have a monk's cloth lounging robe that would be just a dream on you. Oh, if I only had your figure.
Yes, well, of course, you mustn't forget that in 1932, I was Mr. Omaha.
Now, just excuse me a minute, boys. I have to see to some of my other customers. You know how it is when you're a big businessman.
Tracy, just you, don't you hate giddy men always giggling?
Yes, yes. And Wilson, of all people, huh?
Yes.
He's beginning to look rather old, don't you think?
Oh, I should say.
Sort of dissipated like.
Yes.
Yes, he's getting circles under his circles.
Yes, I think his schoolboy complexion is graduating.
Say, Morgan.
Yes?
Don't look now, but isn't that Georgie Jessel over there?
Where?
Oh, right over there. Wearing that little fur hat with the flesh-colored crown.
Hat? Why, that's his head. He's getting bald.
Uh-oh, he's seen us. Here he comes.
Well, hello, boys. I just left Charlie Moskowitz throwing on a new muffler, and isn't a ducky running into you, too, like this?
Uh-huh.
And Tracy, what a perfectly precious snap-brim Adam hat with a two-color band. Do you mind if I try it on?
Oh, no, I really hate to take it off. My hair is a sight, but... But here.
Oh, thanks. Heaps. I just wish I had a mirror here. How does it look on me, boys?
Adorable, Jessel. What do you think, Morgan?
Uh-huh.
What's the matter, Morgan? Cat got your tongue?
Jessel, you know good and well why I'm angry with you. Having your tailor copy my blue herringbone tweed cutaway.
Well, the only reason why I had it copied is because it looks so ravishing on you.
Oh, well, that's different. I did look rather willowy in it, didn't I? But truthfully, Jessel, I thought you looked even better in it than I did.
Yeah, several other people said the same thing.
No wonder they... What? Well, what do they know? After all, the original model was mine.
Well, that's no criterion. That's nothing. I've seen some lovely clothes worn by the wrong men.
Listen here, you old copycat.
Oh, now,
old
boy.
Quiet. The fashion show is starting.
Welcome, men, and good afternoon. We start our show by presenting this outstanding garment for the tall, slender, soft type of man. We call this our Startled Fawn number.
Oh,
lovely.
Isn't that delicious?
Isn't it gorgeous?
This is a combination bathing suit and smoking jacket. Pure Angora wool with patch pocket tobacco pouch cut on the bias. Just the thing for hopping into the pool with your favorite pipe. It's a steal for a measly $179.87.
Steal is right. It's practically highway robbery.
Yes, I think Wilson charges too much for his things.
You know what I do? I just remember the patterns of the outfits I like best, and then I have a little man who comes in and copies them for me on my own sewing machine. And for almost one-third the cost.
Oh, you clever man.
Here is something useful for evening. We call it our first date thrill number. Blue serge trimmed in olive green with white pearl buttons. Sort of a semi-tuxedo.
Yes, the coat is rather chic, but just look at those tight-fitting trousers with those high-water cuffs. Oh.
High-water is right. If they were any higher, his legs would be at half-mast.
Say, Morgan, not changing the subject, but what is that bottle that you're holding?
Well, it's a new kind of cologne. It's called Ghost of Romance.
Ghost of Romance?
Yeah.
It sounds fascinating.
Well, I use it mostly for after shaving. It's so smoothy, cooly, comfy on your facey.
Oh.
Here, just let me put a few drops on your coat lapel.
What is that terrible odor?
Smells like a hospital.
Let me see that bottle. Why, the druggist gave you the wrong bottle. This isn't Ghost of Romance.
No, it's Spirits of Camphor.
Spirits of... well, I thought it tasted funny.
Oh, look. Now, head business.
Thank you, George. Meredith, do you mind joining us over here? I'd like to ask you a question.
Pray do.
Meredith, how would you define freshness?
Well, Ted, I'd say fresh is a new note in music.
That's fair enough. And you, Hanley, how would you define freshness?
Well, Ted, I'd be pretty apt to steal your thunder and say fresh is Maxwell House coffee.
You're absolutely right, Hanley. Yes, fresh is Maxwell House coffee. For Maxwell House is roaster fresh, and no coffee can be fresher than that. And there's a big difference with coffee that's roaster fresh and coffee that's not. How many times have you gone into the grocery store and caught that appetizing smell of coffee? Many times, I suppose. But let me remind you again, that fragrance you smell is flavor escaping from coffee packed in ordinary containers. Flavor being wasted. And that's flavor no one will ever get in the cup. You see, all coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted. And ground coffee packed in ordinary containers where the air can get at it loses as much as 45%. That's nearly half its flavor in only 9 days. But Maxwell House coffee is taken fresh and fragrant from the roasting ovens, packed in that super vacuum can from which all air is removed, and then sealed. So no air can reach the coffee afterward. You get it roaster fresh. That means full flavor in the cup. So if you haven't yet tried the new Maxwell House, by all means get a pound. It's the coffee you'll find now at all grocers in the same familiar blue super vacuum can you've always known. And it's selling at low prices friendly to your budget. Try Maxwell House. Tomorrow.
The doors of our imaginary haven, the MGM Concert Hall, swing open, and you are again invited to listen to a beautiful melody from the pen of a great composer. Meredith Wilson pays tribute to the immortal Tchaikovsky in bringing you one of his most enchanting and gracious melodies, The Sleeping Beauty. We present now a special feature of tonight's program, a young man who is one of the country's foremost authorities on the national pastime for the fall, football. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Francis Wallace.
Okay, Georgie, here's a list of Saturday's games. You call them off and I'll predict them.
Go ahead. I'd like to make a few dollars. Here we go. Number one, Minnesota and Nebraska.
Minnesota, especially if Brock is not in shape.
Stanford and Santa Clara.
Santa Clara because it has a better starting team.
Ohio State and Indiana.
Ohio State, despite the loss of Johnny Rapp.
Notre Dame and Kansas.
Notre Dame, my old alma mater.
Texas Christian versus Arkansas.
Texas Christian.
Auburn and Tulane.
Auburn.
Ah, Auburn, my old alma mater.
You mean the college at Auburn, George?
No, I thought you meant the reform. Anyhow, who'll win the Columbia-Yale game?
Columbia, and there's a long shot.
Louisiana State and Texas.
Louisiana State will snap back from last week's upset.
Wisconsin and Marquette.
Wisconsin.
Michigan and Michigan State.
Michigan.
North Carolina and North Carolina State.
North Carolina.
Imagine two states like that, they can't think up a different name for the colleges. All right. Rice and Oklahoma.
I'll take Rice.
I'll take Vanilla. Tell me. UCLA and Oregon.
UCLA. Hey!
Here's one for you. The Pitt-Temple game.
Oh, I'll take a chance on Pitt. Of course, George, most of these teams have not yet been tested under fire, so don't be surprised at anything that happens anywhere.
Oh, sure, we don't expect you to give a written guarantee with these predictions, but we all know, Frank, that if anybody comes close, it'll be you.
Thanks, Georgie, but remember one thing. Those footballs still take funny bounces.
Yeah. Just a minute, Frank, before you go. Don't forget to give me the $16 you lost to me last week when you picked Southern Cal. Don't forget that, will you?
Okay, George, here you are.
Thank you very much for coming, Frank. Ladies and gentlemen, next week your Good News Show will be headed by Wallace Beery and Mickey Rooney doing scenes from Harry Rapp's great new picture, Stablemate. Our special guest will be that fine comedian, sportsman, and swell fella, Joey Brown. Bob Young will be back as your master of ceremonies, and then, of course, there'll be the regular gang, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, with Daddy Hanley Stafford, Phil Regan, Linny Lynn, and Meredith Wilson's music. If you've enjoyed the Good News program, why don't you tell your friends about it? They'll want to listen to all these stars next week, too. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. This is George Jessel saying good night.
This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.